Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My uncle texted me about a half hour ago. He said, "Do you have a VHS player?" I told him I didn't.
Nope.
I don't even have a DVD player anymore.
Wow.
I can play DVDs on my Xbox One, but I don't have a DVD player set up attached to any TV so I could play a DVD to you.
No, not anymore.
So I definitely don't have a VHS player.
That's wild.
Does anyone have a VHS player
anymore? Yeah, people have them just for nostalgia's sake.
But how many people, do they sell VHSs at stores? How many people are going to a store buying a movie VHS style and going home and popping it in a VHS player? Does that even exist?
I bet you it does, but you got to really want it.
But I'm saying not in the way that someone collects vinyls and plays them because it's fun. Does anybody have a VHS player and play videos just because they like VHSs best?
Yeah, there's a couple crazy folks.
You think
there's a lot on the Venn diagram? It's like they have all the newspapers, or they've got a lot of cats.
The guy that wakes up early to read the newspapers.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing like that.
I know that.
Where they kept them.
It's time for our 5 at 5 on Grant and Danny, presented by Wave Soda. It's awesome, super simple, bubbly water, splash of real juice, and a little bit of caffeine. Unsweetened, no stevia, no artificial sweeteners. It's got a clean finish. Only 2 to 6 grams of sugar and 15 to 25 calories per can. Order now, wavesoda.com. Get 15% by entering our promo code, either one of our names, Grant or Danny. Either one works, 15% off at checkout. Number one in our 5 at 5, the Caps have a new player. Anthony Mantha, acquired in the Jacob Vrana deal, gave up a first, the second, Richard Ponick, and Vrana for Mantha yesterday. He will make his debut tonight. And he wants to bring a physical presence to this team.
I think I could play physical over here. Obviously, like you said, I'm a big body. Try and bring some good one-on-one battles, win them, create some offense, and shoot the puck. I mean, I need to shoot a couple shots per night, and obviously the percentage is always on your side when you do shoot, so hopefully score a couple.
Here's what I'd like. Be defensively accountable and stay out of Coach Laviolette's doghouse. I'd like you to throw your weight around. I'd like you to get to the front of the net and be one of those net front presences we hear a lot about. I'd like you to be the guy that tips in some of the passes that your elite line mates are going to get you and take some of those shots you're talking about. Be a well-rounded, complete player that fits in. Don't do more than Mantha can do, because what Mantha can do is good enough. It's why you've been acquired. I need this to be the jolt. I want this to be that missing piece that makes the Capitals the most formidable team in the Eastern Conference.
I think there's a chance he's got 3 years of term left on his contract after this season that we could get a career year out of Mantha in a Cap sweater. He scored 24 and 25 goals in a two-year span in 17-18 and 18-19. Now, obviously, last year, fewer games were played. This year, fewer games are going to be played. So the numbers are going to reflect a little bit differently. But he's basically been a 20-goal guy for the last three seasons before last year's odd year. I know he's going to be a 20-goal guy here. Can he be a 30-goal guy? If he's a routine member of the top six playing on the second line with Oshie and with Backstrom, assuming that those two guys are still a part of the operation next year and Oshie's not out west but with Seattle, what is his upside? I don't necessarily need him to be all that physical. Like, he fights from time to time. I don't need him to fight anymore.
I don't care about that.
Let Brendan Dillon do that. let Tom Wilson do that. There are guys on this roster like Garnet Hathaway who could throw fists on the fourth line. You go score goals.
Yeah.
You go provide offense. Let's go to number two in our 5-5. How about those Nats last night? They get Kyle Schwarber and Josh Bell and Josh Harrison and Yan Gomes back, and it was like they were a brand new team on offense coming through in the clutch early and often last evening. Kyle Schwarber, multiple hits, including this RBI double the great Dave Jagler called against the Cardinals.
Schwarber waiting on a 1-0 pitch. Here it is. Swinging a line drive right center field. Base hit up the gap for Schwarber. Headed home is Soto. Over to third is Bell. Schwarber trying for second. The throw there is offline. He's in there with a head first double. Welcome to the Nationals, Kyle Schwarber. His first hit, first RBI in a Nats uniform. Gives the Nats a 2-1 lead here in the sixth inning.
In no uncertain terms, they need Kyle Schwarber to be great for them. Not just this week, and which is probably a big ask, but this season. Kyle Schwarber's got to be good. Kyle Schwarber can't just be a walking strikeout that homers once every couple of weeks. He's got to be better than last year's version of Kyle Schwarber. He's got to be close to what he was in 2019. They're hoping that, you know, working with Kevin Long and kind of a bounce-back season for him, adding a presence in the middle of that lineup that lengthens that lineup means that Juan Soto gets more pitches to hit. So that was big for the club to get Bell and Schwarber back last night.
6 for 16 combined, those four guys that were playing last night as reinforcements who hadn't been available previously. Batting 4th, 5th, 7th, and 8th in the order.
There you go.
Starlin Castro smacked in the middle of the four, hitting 6, drove in a couple runs. Bell drew 2 walks. I loved what he displayed. Plate discipline, spitting on a couple of good pitches. And he's nowhere near in the mode he was in the spring when he was killing everything right that was up. I think he had 6 spring training home runs and everything at the belt or so was ending up over the wall.
Just and it casual flip the bat opposite field power too. 500 feet. I mean, just bombs.
Pop like Orville Redenbacher, dude. That guy can drive the baseball. Saw it in Pittsburgh. Problem is going to be getting his timing back. You know, he was swinging through some hittable pitches last night, but he showed some discipline and he walked twice and he got a hit. He was on base 3 times. Schwarber, 2 base hits in 5 at bats. Drove in that big run. Harrison had a hit. And Yan Gomes was 2 for his first 2 in the ballgame. So it was just good to get those guys back. Eric Fetty threw pretty well and lasted 4 2/3. I love Finnegan's stuff out of the pen. I know he got beat by a home run from Yadier Molina. Rainey was probably the wink leak of the night still. Uh-huh. A little bit worried about him. Hudson in the 8th was awesome, and Hand in the 9th was very good. Because of some really bad home plate ball and strike calls, Hand had to throw way more pitches last night than you would have wanted. He threw 26 pitches. So he will not be available tonight.
You wouldn't think.
If they do get to a situation, Strasburg going for the Nationals against, I believe it's Jack Flaherty for the Cardinals. If they're in a save situation, I would think Hudson would be the guy tonight. But that would mean Rainey's probably got to throw on a 3rd straight day, or I don't know how you get
Suero
the ball.
Suero in the 8th.
Hudson.
Maybe score 10 runs. Night. Let's see what happens.
Hey, let's do that. Let's avoid a save opportunity this evening, perhaps, and go with the B bullpen. So the Nats got to win. How about the Wizards?
Yes, sir.
You already know they were in the dub column. Number 3, 5-5, Russell Westbrook continues to play masterful basketball. Almost had a triple-double in a quarter of action. He ended up sealing the game with a pull-up mid-range jumper. NBC Sports Washington, Justin Kutcher, Drew Gooden noticing on the call last night that he was screaming at Utah, "That's game."
Westbrook. Utah wants to play this one out. Westbrook, the pull-up jumper. Got it, rattles it in. Oh, is that big? That is huge by Westbrook.
Can you hear what he's yelling? That's game. I love it. Big shot by Russell Westbrook, making great plays down the stretch. You've seen him hit a couple jumpers, being a facilitator, throwing that lob up to Gafford. I mean, he is on top of his game tonight.
Certainly was. They were dead right about that. Now, here's the thing. Utah normally probably would have just fouled Russell Westbrook there, right? Extend the game, make him make some free throws, except this was the old Russell Westbrook, the guy that can actually make his free throws, 9 out of 11 over the course of the game. So they went underneath the screen, gave him that jump shot, and he buried it right in their eyepieces for the win. 25-14-14. It's hard to do. Get mad if you want. That's really, really hard to do in the NBA, and he makes it look routine.
I think I used to be annoyed by Russell Westbrook as a dude. I don't know if it was his interactions with fans a couple times or I don't know. There is a perception of him nationally that I don't know that it meshes with what he is when you see him day in and day out in your own market. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I get what you mean. Like, it's one of those dudes where he's on the rival here, and you get irritated. But he's yours, and you go, man, that's awesome.
I don't even know.
Is it like that?
I don't think I'm saying that, no. I'm saying the way that he's portrayed nationally and what he actually is when he's on your team, I think, are two different things. Like, I think he cares more about basketball than anybody else in the building. I think he loves basketball more than anybody else in the building. I think he sleeps with a basketball in his bed. And I don't know that that's necessarily the perception, or maybe I just didn't read enough about Russell Westbrook, but I really like the dude. The player,
I get that.
Great nights, bad nights, jumping up, screaming positively, jumping up, screaming negatively at times over things he's doing. He's been great lately. Great.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the player, the leader that he is. He is a dude. That's the kind of guy that you want in your foxhole.
Only got a scholarship offer because Jordan Farmar declared pro at UCLA. Think about that.
That's insane.
Turned himself from that to lottery pick to MVP to scoring champ and everything in between.
Greatest rebounding point guard in history?
As far as I'm concerned, yeah. Right?
I think the only guy that comes to mind.
Oscar Robertson averaged some triple doubles
would be in the convo. But Russell Westbrook has to be in that discussion. A number four in our 5 at 5. Julian Edelman is retiring. The Patriots wide receiver who's got some of the best playoff numbers ever. In fact, only Jerry Rice ever caught more passes at wide receiver in the postseason than Edelman, who announced on Twitter that he is stepping away yesterday.
Nothing in my career has ever come easy. And no surprise, this isn't going to be easy either. Now, I've always said, I'm going to go until the wheels come off. And they finally have fallen off. Due to an injury last year, I'll be making my official announcement of my retirement from football. It was a hard decision, but the right decision for me and my family. And I'm honored and so proud to be retiring a Patriot.
When he's in Tampa, what are we going to say? I'm just kidding, of course. Great career. These are the kinds of stories that, instead of getting mired in, is he a Hall of Famer, some sort of weird hot takery, we should always stop and remember that these stories are possible. The college quarterback from Kent State out of California turned himself from a 7th-round pick into a really good NFL player. Like, that shouldn't be happening, right? There's all sorts of data. There's millions and millions and millions of dollars dedicated. There's all these experts that have seen a billion snaps that grind in rooms over tape or DVDs or internet videos or whatever the hell you want to call it, right? To figure out who's good and who's not. And it's an inexact science at best. Guys like this slip through the cracks, and the Patriot way has been to say, you're not going somewhere else to be good. You're going to be good for us. We're going to fit you into our thing, and you'll turn out great. A couple, 3 different 1,000-yard receivers, a 970-plus-yard season as well. Has had years we had over 100 catches. A really good player for a really long time, beset by injuries, though.
232nd pick in the 09 draft. You mentioned 7th round, but 232 overall. This is the move that works. There are a bunch of these that didn't work for Bill Belichick, where they just get way outside the box. Where they look at Julian Edelman, as you said, quarterback at Kent State, and they say, football player.
Football player.
That's a football player.
Football player.
We'll turn him into a special teams return man. We'll maybe make him a slot receiver. Perhaps he'll line up with, was it Danny Woodhead catching passes out of the backfield for them?
Absolutely was, yeah.
And he'll be a pass-catching scat back for us. We're going to find a way with this guy who's 5'9 and some change, 187 pounds probably at the time, if that, coming out of Kent State. We'll figure something out. And they did. I give the Patriots a lot of credit. I give Edelman more credit. You got to work your butt off. You got to grind. And he did. He went from barely playing and barely getting any looks 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012 to all of a sudden in 2013 being a full-time starter who got 150 targets and caught 100 passes after Wes Welker left, replacing him in that role in the offense.
Didn't miss a beat. Amazing.
Him and Tom Brady, super tight. Brady loves him, was posting about him last night on social media. I will say, and this, to your point, is not how this should ever go, but I saw Pat McAfee does a great show, super entertaining guy. I'm a big fan of McAfee in general. He's got a good thing going in this industry. I saw him saying he doesn't like that people are now kind of bashing Edelman by saying he's not a Hall of Famer. Like, why is that coming up right now? And it's not like people are just coming out when he announced his retirement to scream, Julian Edelman's not a Hall of Famer.
We'd like to announce this guy specifically is not a Hall of Famer.
What's happening is a lot of people are doing the Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer thing.
Right.
The natural reaction then to that is to discuss, is he a Hall of Famer? And people like me who are sane and who are reasonable and who aren't wackadoos say, no, of course Julian Edelman is not a Hall of Famer. Why would Julian Edelman be a Hall of Famer? That's a ridiculous thing to say. I don't mean it to belittle Julian Edelman. I'm not raining on the guy's parade. Mm-hmm. The story should absolutely be about this kind of worst to first, seventh round, obscure, anonymous, random player to great elite talent on a championship level team, year in and year out, putting up huge numbers in the playoffs. But when Colin Cowherd is doing 45 minutes nationally right. on why he's going to the Hall of Fame, and all these random shows are now putting him over as if there aren't 47 wide receivers waiting in line and with better resumes in front of them, numbers approximate, that's where you get people that come out and say, eh, Julian Edelman probably not a Hall of Famer. It's not just trying to be mean.
Sure.
It's having the discussion because people are saying he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Number five, final item today on our 5 at 5 brought to you by Wave Soda. Speaking of football, there is a new tight end in town for the Washington football team. His name is Samus Reyes. He played college basketball. He is from Chile, came over to the United States and Florida at 14 years old. Scott Pioli with a little breakdown on a guy who is part of a roster Pioli put together for international talents.
The guy that showed out today is Samus Reyes from Chile. Fascinating background. He grew up in Chile, played basketball, was an international AAU player, came to the United States on his own. And again, his background is just incredible. Ended up going to Tulane after 2 years of junior college, playing NCAA basketball, being a very good player. Came in today, measured at 6.053, 260 pounds. Vertical jumped 40 inches, Andrew. 31 reps on the bench and ran a 4.65. Had a tremendous day.
This is when you do a sliding scale of size, physicality, to athleticism. This is the number one athletic size adjusted tight end ever to enter the NFL, according to how they measure this, right? So there are other guys that are faster, but they don't weigh 260 pounds. There are other guys that jump higher, but they're not 6'6". This is an athletic specimen that blew people away with that athleticism. I don't know if that means he's going to be a great football player. I have no idea. I don't think anybody does. But this is the kind of skill set, or this is the kind of raw athleticism that is absolutely worth investigating. So good on the Washington football team for snatching him up. You throw him on the practice squad. You put him with a renowned tight ends coach that just gave us the Logan Thomas experience, and you let him go to work. I'm all in on it.
You want to get football fans excited? You go find a basketball player, and you make him a tight end.
That's right.
And you say you just found Antonio Gates.
That's right.
I'm Maybe. A sucker too, people. I'll fall for it as well. This is definitely a guy to take a flyer on, and I'm excited that Washington is outside the box, and they're trying things like this with their scouting department. Grant and Danny on the Fan. I got a guy on hold who wants to say Julian Edelman's absolutely a Hall of Famer. We can mess around and take that call next, I suppose.
From Boston.
Probably is from Boston, actually. I will guarantee you, not knowing anything about the guy, that he's a Patriots fan. I mean, there's just no way you can make that case if you're not a Patriots fan. But we can get to that call. Also next, how much better do you feel about the Nationals after they got their major league hitters back, scored runs, and won a baseball game last night? Are you ready to walk back from that ledge? Step back from that ledge, my friend. You could.
Capsize from all the lies you've been swimming in?
I thought it was cut ties.
I don't know. I wasn't confident there off the bat.
Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Arenado in shallow at third. Here's a swing and a high drive to right field. Back on this one is Edmund to the warning track, to the wall, and it's gone! Andrew Stevenson drops one into the Cardinal bullpen for a pinch hit home run. his first of the season. And the Nationals have the run back and lead it 4-2 over the Cardinals.
Attaboy, Andrew Stevenson. Showing a little power, third over the fence home run and 250 plate appearances in the big leagues.
We've always thought, you know, it was there. That's why we always were like, yeah, just give him a chance. Of course he'll homer a lot.
Looks a lot better coming off the bench.
Yeah.
Than he does playing every day.
Thank you.
Matt's got their players back and scored some runs and won a game yesterday. We'll get into that in just a moment. But I mentioned in our 5 at 5 that it is Julian Edelman, the Hall of Fame season. And I've kind of been shocked by how many people are making that case that are smart football people. And it sounds like Jim in Silver Spring has a bone to pick. What's up, Jim? How are you?
Hey, Jim.
How you doing, Grant and Danny? First of all, before you start pummeling me, I'm a hardcore scene head who's been calling you guys weekly with baseball calls. And
you're not getting pummeled.
No one's pummeling.
There's no pummeling.
There's no pummeling.
Don't even worry about
that.
No
pummeling.
I'm being facetious.
All right. All right.
Part of it is I. By the way, I want to make a quick aside. I heard Danny on another show earlier today, and I knew you'd play baseball at St. Albans, but I didn't know you played basketball there.
Yeah, I wasn't particularly good. I got dunked on a lot. I was on the end of a lot of really good basketball players being in this area. But yeah, I was on the team. I would say.
Yeah. So just my quick aside before I make my point about Edelman. So I'm old enough that I'm good friends with your old coach, Bob Brown.
Oh, right on.
And when I wrote for ESPN.com and Rivals for years, used to cover that band, the Brick League, that you all had at St. Albans. It was such a great summer league.
That was an awesome summer league. Some incredible talent came through there, and I was there too.
Absolutely. Yeah. But anyhow, my point on Edelman was, and I bring a kind of a different perspective being older, is that I think when you look at a guy like Edelman, you can't just go by the numbers, because what we've seen in football in the last, however, half generation is with these video game receiving numbers, you have guys catching 140 balls in a year when you used to be able to lead the league with 70. And, it's a pass-friendly game now. And I think when you look at the body of Edelman's work, and even discounting the human interest component of being a seventh-round pick out of Kent State, you look at something like this, they keep showing the highlights of some of these amazing catches that he made, just not clutch catches, but amazing catches that he made. So I'm not saying that he's necessarily Hall of Famer, but I think to dismiss it out of hand, 20 years from now, Jerry Rice and Art Monk won't have any records left. I mean, you got Jags out there catching 100 balls a year. So I think it's just something that I wouldn't dismiss out of hand when you look at the body of his work. Not saying that rings is the only thing, but I think it's something.
Thanks for the call, man.
Thanks for the call.
So go ahead, Jeeps.
Well, I'll dismiss it out of hand, to be completely honest with you. And I don't mean that disrespectfully to either the caller or Edelman, but when we talk about the Hall of Fame, numbers do matter. And kind of where you stack up, he's saying compared to past eras, and I understand that. I'm not going to compare him to past eras. In his own era,
right,
he's never been one of the best wide receivers or close to it. From 2009, when he got into the league, to 2020, he ranks 23rd among wideouts and targets, 17th in catches, 34th in yards, and he's tied with, and this is with tight ends as well, by the way, tied with Zach Ertz at 54th in touchdowns. If you want to say, well, it took him a few years to get going, and early on he didn't really do a whole lot, so his prime really started in around 2000, I think it was 12 or 13. Let's just look at those last seven seasons. Well, then he ranks outside of the top 10 in targets, 11th, which is as high as he's going to get on these lists with targets and catches, 8th in catches, 16th in yards, and tied with guys like Jarvis Landry in touchdowns. He's behind Michael Crabtree in that category during the part of his career where he's actually been a stat accumulator. He never led the league in a single category. I'm a big believer in that Bill James, what I call black ink, kind of Hall of Fame nod. He never made a Pro Bowl. He was never an All-Pro. Nothing about this says Hall of Fame at any point. He was unbelievable in the playoffs, and I will absolutely give him that. But numbers, being elite among your peers, being planned for and feared, none of those things were ever what Julian Edelman was. He was a, hey, let's take this away and let Julian Edelman get 9 to 12 yards at a time in the middle of the field. That's what he was. Great player. Not a Hall of Famer.
So the argument, and that it comes into where you talk about different eras, right? Where that was the argument I always had to make for Art Monk, where we're after the fact, we're going, well, look at the numbers that are being put up now. They're not what Art Monk was putting up. And I go, okay, well, let's look at his peers, right? And that's how you can make the argument that he just made for Julian Edelman. But that's not a different era. That's this era. We're in it right now, and his numbers don't stack up to the other guys that are putting up those video game numbers. This is a nice player. No one says it's a bad story. No one's saying this isn't a productive, good NFL football player. But this is not what a Hall of Famer looks like. This is a good player on a great team with some wonderful opportunities who, by accumulation, put up some good postseason stats.
There's also this. There are unbelievable, worthy wide receivers who are not in the Hall of Fame. We cannot have a conversation about Julian Edelman being in the Hall of Fame until Torrey Holt is in the Hall of Fame. Torrey Holt stopped playing in 2009. Is still not in the Hall of Fame. 920 catches and about 13,500 yards. Over 300 more catches and almost twice as many yards. Like, Edelman's somewhere in the 6,000s. Holt is somewhere in the 13,000s. Torrey Holt's not in the Hall of Fame. Having a hell of a time to get in. So the idea that Julian Edelman is just going to now be in line with Torrey Holt and standing shoulder to shoulder with him is crazy.
Is Reggie Wayne in, by the way? I think Reggie Wayne's not in, if memory serves.
If
I could
he's
be wrong
not
about
in,
that.
It just hasn't been long enough.
Really? I think
when did
I
he retire? Has it been 5 years?
Now I'm not even
no
sure
way.
Anymore.
He was look somewhere, it up.
Yeah, okay, I'll look it up. But like I got to make sure he's in first. Like those kinds of guys, like Torrey Holt, Reggie Wayne, all-time leaders. So I may be wrong. But I thought he was eligible. Maybe he isn't yet.
14. Looks like he would be eligible. Or this could be his year, because it's normally 6 years after you first play.
Right.
You last play is how it works. So this was his first year or next year. But similarly.
But you see the point I'm trying to make, right?
1,000 catches, 14,000 yards. Reggie Wayne, twice as deserving of the Hall of Fame as Julian Edelman.
Once we take care of all those guys, once all the surefire, oh my God, how are they not in the Hall of Fame yet, guys get in, let's do that. Then we're going to have a conversation. He still doesn't make it then, by the way.
He might be eligible. I'm not sure. But I think the math would make me think that he is. By the way, how about that? Reggie Wayne hasn't played since 14. But he was on a team, I think. I'm looking at his stats. And his last year that he caught a pass was 14.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he go to the Patriots or something like that and like have a training camp and then retire?
I feel like he
did
that.
So I wonder if that pushes the clock back.
Maybe it did.
Let's go to Eric in Orange on Grant and Danny. What's up, Eric?
What's up, Grant and Dave?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
So, first of all, not many of Jerry Rice's records are ever going to fall. Talk about all these Hall of Famer wide receivers, like surefire, like Torrey Holt. Thank you for bringing up Torrey Holt, by the way. How many yards does he have? Jerry Rice has 22,000.
Yeah, 9,000.
It's so ungodly, by the way.
From Jerry Rice.
It's stupid, those numbers.
How many receptions does Torrey Holt have? 900, and he's a surefire Hall of Famer? Jerry Rice has 1,549 receptions.
That's insane.
Not unbelievable.
Hold on, let me think about this out loud with you here, Eric. Let me spitball.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking of guys that play in this era, because the caller, his name was Jim, I believe. Jim was actually 100% right about how easy it is now for wide receivers to put up numbers compared to guys like Monk. Now, I don't think anyone catches Rice, but I'm just trying to think. Someone that'll play their entire career and benefit in this era, would it be like a Michael Thomas maybe? I'm just trying to think of a name to kind of forecast like what he'd have to do to catch Rice. Thomas already has...
People don't catch 140 that often. There hasn't been that many 140 reception seasons. There's
he's
been
got
like five.
510 Three. Catches in 5 years. So what did you say Rice has?
1,549.
So he'd have to basically stay at the pace he's at for 16 years to catch him.
Not happening.
That is nuts.
Especially not
holy
with
crap.
Without Breeze. There's only one comp for Edelman to be in the Hall of Fame, Lynn Swann. He doesn't have numbers, but he has amazing highlight catches, and he has rings. That's the only comp.
Yeah, and this is where I'm going to...
And then it's the error question.
Michael Irvin doesn't have numbers either, really.
But here's the thing. Thanks for the call, Eric.
Thank you, buddy.
And this is where I lose some people and annoy others. My Hall of Fame would be tiny. You guys know that by listening to the show long enough. Like when I look back at a guy like Lynn Swann, and I don't like saying this because I got to know him a little bit. We worked together. I got to go to the Super Bowl for ABC Sports, and I did a couple events with him where we rode around in a town car together. We went and filmed I think it was like an EA Sports game before the game deal. Where two players, Charlie Garner for the Bucks, and who did it for the Raiders? Tim Brown, I think, for the Raiders.
Good one, yeah.
Played in like a video game against each other before the Super Bowl. And me and Lynn Swann worked the event. Couldn't have been a more pleasant, awesome guy. Lynn Swann probably shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
336 receptions.
All right, let me just change what I just said. Lynn Swann shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Honestly, I mean, and that's like a ridiculous thing for just a fat dude sitting here whose career peaked at a youth field near his house to say, and Lynn Swann would probably laugh it off, and he should. But Lynn Swann...
He achieved. He's fine.
He caught over 50 passes one time. He had over 800 yards twice, 808 and 880. Never had 900 yards in a season.
More career receptions, Eddie Royal or Lynn Swann?
That's a funny game. I'll say Eddie Royal because I'm asking. Is it Eddie Royal?
Eddie Royal.
I mean, yeah, that's a
Virginia
joke.
Tech zone. Different eras. I'm very aware of the eras.
Yes.
Everyone settled down.
Jim mentioned that.
Yes.
But that's what it was. Like, four-time Super Bowl champion.
Yeah. And the highlight reel catches.
And for the record, he did go to three Pro Bowls. So he actually was much better in his era than, say, Eddie Royal was in his.
Yes, I'm aware.
Obviously.
Yes.
How hot do we want to get here? How deep down this road? How many people do we want to annoy?
The opinions of Grant Paulson don't necessarily reflect the opinions of old Randy Douye. So you go ahead. You take your flamethrower out. You Al Pacino this thing at the end of Son of a Woman. You're in the middle of the school. They're putting these kids on trial, and you got a feeling. Go.
Terry Bradshaw. Immensely overrated. Completely overrated. 212 touchdowns. Yeah. 210 interceptions in his career.
The old 1-to-1 ratio.
You know that? I'm going to say it again for you, the people in the back of the room.
I love it.
212 touchdowns, 210 picks. If he started today, he'd get benched. But at least he was on four Super Bowl teams. So we'll talk about him as one of the best ever.
Overrated.
Just a fat guy sitting in a studio. Taken away.
I love these, by the way. There is no person in the history of the medium that we're in, you and I are fortunate enough to be able to talk every day, that disrespects the guys that came before more than you.
Possibly.
And I love it. Dude, this isn't me complaining. This is me just pointing it out. If you played pretty much before, what, 1990, you may as well not even count those numbers.
No, that's not true. You just have to have been good. Like, I remember Terry Bradshaw. He was Kellen Clemens. That's the difference.
What about Babe Ruth?
Babe Ruth. He was Tyler Moore. Babe Ruth was Tyler Moore.
Who was Walter Johnson?
Walter Johnson. He was Taylor Jordan. Taylor Hill. Which Taylor was he?
Which is the guy, by the way, that I told you was going to be good because I liked his change up.
Right. No, he wasn't that. That's a joke.
That's a joke.
Walter Johnson was...
Craig Stammen.
I'm trying to think of someone who threw 86. Levon Hernandez? Something like that?
He could throw every day. Oh.
All right.
Oh, it was fun for me. Thank you. Thank you.
Too many people are angry.
Thanks for letting me
do that. We've got to move along.
I had a good time.
I hope you had fun.
We had fun.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. You feeling a little better about the Nats? Plus, Brian McClellan says don't worry about the cap speed. Those two things next on G&G.
A good teammate, big size, strength. He's a long player. Uses a long stick. Has really good hands. Good hockey sense. Can play with good players. Can score goals. Uses his strength well. Has pretty good speed when he wants to. Pretty good all-around player.
That was GM Brian McClellan on the show yesterday. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. If you haven't heard our interview with Mac, he was on for like 12 minutes right after the deadline. We talked about the Raffle trade, got to the bottom of giving up Vrana and why it didn't work with Laviolette. We discussed Mantha coming to town. He's going to debut tonight. He'll be on the second line with Nicholas Backstrom and TJ Oshie. So you're going to get the top line of Ovechkin, Wilson, centered by Kuznetsov. And then that second line, the Backstrom line, is going to have Oshie and Mantha on it. I'm excited to see how he fits in with the Caps.
Me too.
You'll hear from him in just a moment as he spoke with the media today. But McClellan was very candid in talking about the Verona part of this deal. He said, listen, guys, we made this deal for two reasons. Number one, business move. Jake was due a big payday this offseason. We know that.
Yep.
They don't have a lot of money. The contract they're bringing in is fairly team-friendly for a player who can score 25 to 30 goals in Manta for the next 3 years after this one.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also under contract. You don't have to give him a raise. There's no payment coming. Whereas Frana was due at least probably as much by the end of his deal.
You would think,
what
right?
What Manta's making or more, a year younger and with some goal-scoring chops. But he also said, we like Manta a whole lot. We like the player. This was Manta talking to the media. I want to go to cut one here when he was discussing the trade. You're just taking a nap and you find out you're no longer a Red Wing, only team you've played for. Now you're going to the Caps where they got designs on a cup.
A lot. Excitement, obviously. Surprise. Like you said, I just signed a deal in Detroit, so I thought I was going to stay there for a couple more years. But it's part of hockey. It's part of our life. So a new beginning over here, and I'm excited to join the Caps.
He talked about his game and what he wants to bring offensively to the Capitals.
I think I could bring a lot of offense over here. The style of play the Caps play, I think will fit just in. Obviously, I'm excited. I'm going to play a big body. I'm going to shoot a lot of pucks and try to make great plays.
The question, Danny, is simple. Does this team have enough speed? Can they skate enough to keep up with some of the really fast teams that they're going to deal with in the playoffs? They are huge. We had EJ Raddick of NHL Network on the show earlier today, and EJ said he can't think of a bigger team. He can't remember a team with this kind of size.
They're an all-get-off-the-bus team, you know?
And teams don't want to deal with that. In a 6-7-game series, them being that big and that physical and that heavy and leaning on you and wearing you down in the corners and up against the boards, that's going to exhaust these smaller, faster teams. But there is some concern about if they're fast enough. And we asked Brian McClellan about this, and he painted a picture that they got plenty of speed and that skating's not an issue. Here's what he said yesterday on Grant and Danny.
When we're playing our game, when we're playing a fast game, I think we're a fast team. I think there's certain things that happen systematic or work ethic-wise where it can turn us into a slower team and we don't play the right way. I think Mantha is a really good skater, especially for his size. I mean, I think he has good speed. So I'm comfortable with the speed level of our team when we're playing the right way. I think speed is more how you're playing the game versus, you know, actual outright speed. I think you would find a lot of players that have similar, if you're actually doing miles per hour, they're pretty close. There's a few players in the league that are, you know, at elite level, but it's more about playing the right way, about playing fast and working hard that way. And when we're doing that, we're not a slow team.
So it's almost like now we're getting into the semantics of what speed we're actually talking about, right? So I'm not suggesting that we get to race the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'm not suggesting we line two guys up on the blue line and throw a puck to the other end of the ice and see if Mantha can get there quicker than Vrana or Jake Guentzel or something like that. Here's what I'm saying. I know what it looks like when there are teams that are fast against the Capitals. Whether it's straight line speed or quickness or short area, I know that when Pittsburgh's disrupting Washington with their quickness and speed and ability to put pressure because of how fast they're moving, it could really get them out of their rhythm. That's what I'm worried about. So if you're going, well, the speed's the same, it's not a big deal. I'm going, okay, fine, your definition's cool. Here's what I'm worried about. Teams that are quicker on ice with more pace that can cover some of the short areas and get to pucks quicker than you because you're not great on the face-off, and I worry about teams being able to break out against you. So that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about speed.
There are games where they get exposed in that regard. And what McClellan's saying, I understand, and I actually think it's 100% right. If we're playing our game, mm-hmm. and when we're playing the way we want to, I don't know that he's saying speed doesn't matter as much as we can account for that.
Right.
We can slow those teams down. Because that, to me, is really what they are and what they want to do. They want to take that speed away. They want to play a structured, strong game defensively and in the neutral zone to prevent some of the breakouts that you're alluding to and to keep teams from getting up to speed and getting down the ice. And they can do that when they're doing things properly, when they're getting the puck in deep, when they're forechecking, and on the other side of the ice, when they're playing a pretty defensively sound game and you're not giving up any rushes. But that doesn't happen all the time. And the reason you want speed is mm-hmm. so that when you have games where it's just not going that way and you got to maybe play the other team's way, where they're dictating terms, at least you can survive some of those contests.
Right.
Now, I'll say that as far as just trading Verana being a big difference in this regard, with or without him, that wasn't how you were going to win. Like, he wasn't a good enough player defensively. He wasn't a 200-foot guy in that regard that all of a sudden, without him, like, that speed showed up night in and night out, shift in, shift out. His speed showed up on offense when he was breaking away and scoring goals at times. But it's not like all of a sudden now it'll be a problem. And before, if you just kept Jake Verana, you would have had plenty of speed. I don't view it that way.
Right, they don't have enough team speed with or without him.
The question is, can you, A, do you have enough? McClellan thinks they do. And B, can you, more importantly, I think, can you mask that deficiency? Because you got a strength. You're huge. You got a strength. You're physical.
Yep.
Can you make that the way the game is played? So that speed,
it's like Scott McLuhan style versus the rest of the league's trending fast, you're trending huge.
You're zigging when they're zagging. Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports, has a 2-round mock. We'll talk to him next. And Danny on the Fan with you until 6:30 tonight, taking you up to extended Nationals pregame. Caps, I believe, are on 980 a.m. this evening. 99.1, actually.
99.1.
I should remember that. I was told that like a week ago, and I botched
it. I get told lots of stuff.
Yeah.
It's awesome for the teller to be able to know that they told me. It's not as awesome for me because I don't remember it.
We've got lots of stations now. I also know that. Let's go right now to the BetQL guest hotline. Welcome onto the program, our buddy, Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports. I got to say, Ryan, it has been way too long since we've had you on the show, but the draft is now 16 days away, and it is time to chop it up with you. How you been, brother?
I'm hanging in there, guys. How you guys doing?
Good, man.
Doing very well. I saw your 2-round mock came out. Can you tell me how much work goes into that? And like, are you making a lot of calls to teams and actually trying to be an insider, or are you just doing what you would do with that pick? How does that work?
I'm laughing, Grant, because I thought you were going to say, are you making a lot of money doing this? And the answer is, no, I'm not making a lot of money.
That, yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, so Wouldn't that be a hilarious way to start an interview with a guest, is to
Ryan,
ask them
I what assume you're rich now because of your mock.
What their salary is. That would be a good way to start an interview.
Yeah, I am so punch drunk at this point after doing so. I'm literally on version 32, but that's, you know, that's again, that's why I get paid the small bucks. So I do make some calls throughout the season, during the college football season, and I make some calls during the run for the draft. I don't call specifically about this. Sometimes I'll send it off to a scout that I trust and say, you know, pick this apart, because it certainly will get blown to pieces on Twitter. But, yeah, it's a process. But one comes out each week. And the last month or so, I've been doing multi-round mock drafts. And next week, I actually do my one and only, thank God, 7-rounder. But the idea, of course, is to, in a post-free agency world, figure out what the needs are, try to address those needs, and sometimes get a little spicy so people have something to yell at you about on Twitter.
All right. So, speaking of spicy, you're the one who turned me on to this. I went from, there's a chance this happens. Your certainty and your confidence. So, you remember, I know this is an obscure reference. Remember at Zero Dark 30 when all the guys are sitting around trying to figure out, like, what's real, what's not? And they're like, what's your confidence of 100%? Why? And they pointed at Jessica Chastain's character. You're my Jessica Chastain on this. I'm trying to convince Grant that Mac Jones to 3 is a thing. It's fetch. It's here. It's happening. It's real. Tell him why it's happening.
So here's the thing, Grant, and it sounds crazy. I know it sounds insane in 2021 to think of Mac Jones and that body type as being a top 5 pick. But I was talking to teams in late December, the end of the college football season, and just sort of shooting the breeze about the quarterbacks that were going to be available. And I, you know, I made a pass kind of, you know what, I really like Mac Jones. And I had more than one team tell me this guy is going to be a top 10 pick. So I would say it on CBS Sports HQ, and I would write about it on CBS Sports, and I would get sideways looks and people telling me that I was crazy, and, you know, just sort of that you're being taken or whatever. But in late December, no one's really smoke screening yet. You're just having a conversation. So, you know, I said, all right, I'm going to ride this train as far as it'll go until it either goes off the cliff or it arrives safely. And, you know, lo and behold, the 49ers trade up from 12 to 3. If you're building a quarterback in the lab for Kyle Shanahan, he'd be in a little better shape than Mac Jones, but he virtually does everything Mac Jones does. And the thing that I keep coming back to, in addition to these teams just talking him up to such a degree that it made me go back and double and triple check, is that when you talk to people that were at the Senior Bowl, he is so smart, Mac Jones, in terms of knowing what to do with the football. And I'm not just talking, hey, he's pretty smart for college kids. We're talking NFL level intelligence about what you need to do and when you need to do it. And that screams to me Kyle Shanahan and what he wants to happen. And sometimes people say, well, Mac Jones is just Jimmy Garoppolo. Mac Jones ain't Jimmy Garoppolo. Otherwise, Jimmy Garoppolo wouldn't be fighting for his job. Jimmy G also can't stay healthy. And I feel like Mac Jones helps get them to that next level. Now, look, maybe they take Justin Fields. Maybe this is an elaborate smokescreen. I love Justin Fields as well. Justin Fields clearly looks like a quarterback should look in 2021. But I'm not going to be surprised if Mac Jones goes 3. And if he doesn't go 3, I'm not going to be surprised when a team trades up for him and takes him inside the top 8. Because, look, there's a reason that the Panthers, who coached the Senior Bowl team that Mac Jones was on, decided, you know what, we'll settle for Sam Darnold after the 49ers moved up. Presumably because the quarterback they liked, I'm guessing Mac Jones, they knew wasn't going to be there. And that gives me a sort of another clue into the idea that maybe this is their guy at number 3 for San Francisco.
You kind of brushed past this, but I want to take out a shovel and go a little deeper into this, which is I need you to explain to me why Justin Fields is getting dinged because he went to a school where quarterbacks aren't normally able to pan out and has a lot of help around him. And no one seems to care that those two things are also true for Mac Jones.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point, Grant. I'm glad you brought it up because I think what happens is, like I was talking to a team that had a pretty high draft pick back in the middle of the season, and they were a little nervous about Justin Fields, not because he can't play at a high level, and certainly not because he went to Ohio State. Most people I talk to in the league don't care about the Ohio State connection or the Alabama connection for that matter. But what I heard was that he sometimes still makes decisions that make you a little worried taking that high. And the thing is, and this is something, this isn't a knock on Justin Fields coming out of the league or by me, because again, he's a top 10 talent in my mind. Year two for Trevor Lawrence, the beginning of that season, if you remember, he didn't play great. 4 or 5 games in that season, we were wondering, okay, what's wrong with Trevor Lawrence? He got his feet underneath him to finish the season strong, and then he finished strong last season, obviously, and no one's ever talked about him since. That, to me, feels like Justin Fields' trajectory. A year and a half into his college career, basically, he played a half year last year in the Big Ten. There are still some questions. There's a ton of upside. Like, you feel comfortable at 95% of it, but that 5% makes you a little apprehensive, perhaps, if you have a top 5 pick. A year from now, he would be Trevor Lawrence had he come back. But that's a fair question also about Mac Jones. And I would just say this. I thought this. I talked to people around Alabama. I've talked to scouts about this. They all agree that Mac Jones is better than Tua coming out. And you can make the argument, obviously, well, they had all the first-round picks at wide receiver, all the first-round picks along the offensive line, that great defense, so on and so forth. And those are fair things to bring up. And then you have to do the projection. Okay, how is he going to play at the next level? And I'll just go back to what I said earlier, that the decisiveness with which Mac Jones plays is so much beyond what we saw from Tua a year ago. And Tua was a top-5 pick all day long. No one seemed to have any concerns about anything other than the hip, not the arm strength. He didn't run around a lot. He's just he's a better looking athlete than Mac Jones. And I think that's, again, where we get hung up on that. And we get hung up on the idea that, quote unquote, Justin Fields is falling. And I think that's more a media / social media creation than what teams feel about all these quarterbacks.
CBS Sports' is Ryan Wilson with us breaking down his 2-round mock draft. What are the Washington football team guys going to do?
That's a great question. So this is the first time that I've had them trading up for a quarterback. And I said specifically on CBS Sports when I wrote this, I said, this is my hunch based off Mike Lombardi saying on his podcast, the former GM, that he hears that Washington loves Trey Lance. I haven't heard that, but I haven't really checked into it. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say they do. You're definitely going to have to trade up inside the top 10 to get him. So if that's the direction you're going, and I think this would actually be a pretty good landing spot for Trey Lance, because I love what Washington's done in the offseason. They're in a division where they can win right away. They did it last year. This time, I think they can do it with more wins than losses in terms of being much more competitive and making this division a little better. But they need a quarterback. But I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a one-year stopgap, like he has been for the last half of his career, it feels like. But unlike last year where Tua was sort of forced into the field, if you draft Trey Lance, there's no reason to push him out there if Ryan Fitzpatrick's playing well. You have that great defense. You got some playmakers around Ryan Fitzpatrick now. You have Taylor Heineke if you need him in a pinch. So I had Trey Lance going first. And in the second round, I had him getting Terrace Marshall, the big wide receiver out of LSU, who gives him an additional playmaker to go on with Samuel and, of course, Terry McLaurin to help that offense get to the next level. And I think this actually makes sense on some level. some fans may disagree with the idea of giving him draft picks. I understand that. And they could perhaps focus on offensive line or linebacker should they stay put at 19.
If they traded up into the top 10 for Lance, first of all, what do you think of the value of what they'd have to give up to go get him at 8 in terms of very little film, competition he's played? And then second, give me a deeper eval on the player.
Yeah, so I think the trade I did, I said the 19th pick, this year's 74th pick, next year's second-round pick. And if you look at the sort of new age value chart after the CBA in 2011, that is a pretty fair trade. But given what the 49ers hit, you may have to give another first-round pick if you're Washington. So
that's not bad, honestly. If they could do that, they could flip picks, give up a third this year and a second next year, I'd feel great about that.
Yeah, but again, if you're holding the leverage as the Panthers and you understand what this pick is for, you can certainly squeeze more out of it, just like the Dolphins did at number 3, and the 49ers are more than happy to oblige. So, but again, so you have to consider what that's worth. So what is Trey Lance the player? You sort of touched on it, Grant. He's only played 17 games, all those games at the FCS level. One game last year, sort of a showcase game that was a weird thing for everyone involved. He didn't play great, but no one really expected him to. Fantastic. Like athletically, he checks every box and then some. He's built like a 6'3 running back, and he did a lot of running, did it successfully, and that's an element that he brings to an offense. But he also has a fantastic arm. He moves well in the pocket. He's incredibly smart. He was tasked with calling out the protections pre-snap in North Dakota State, and his coaching staff trusts him a lot to do that. The only issue is, we've alluded to it, he hasn't played a lot. While guys like Mac Jones and Zach Wilson were throwing the ball 30 times a game, and that run-heavy offense in North Dakota State, Trey Lance was throwing it 16, 17 times a game. So there's going to be a curve there, a learning curve, and you just have to understand that. If you're patient, and it's hard to be patient in this day and age unless you're Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, but if you're patient, you have a chance for this guy to be really good. And the other issue, and we don't talk about this enough, it has to be the right landing spot. You can't just draft someone to the Jets and magically expect Zach Wilson to be the next Tom Brady. But I think Washington is in a situation with the new coach and the new front office where they seem to be going in the right direction, and you can bring Trey Lance along slowly and not force him onto the field like we saw with the last quarterback in Washington that didn't last very long.
Ryan, where's the value in this first round? I guess I look back to last year, right, where Jefferson went from Minnesota, looks like the best pick on the board, right? So if somebody falls in love with Jamar Chase and then Jalen Waddle goes, well, Devontae Smith, the third wide receiver off the board, is great value, something like that. Where do you think that sweet spot value-wise is? And what I'm kind of getting at is, how might that impact Washington if they stay at 19?
Yeah, so the offensive line you're going to run offensive line. You could see six or seven guys go in the first round. You touch on wide receiver, and the big three are there, and then things get sort of interesting where the teams consider the guys who are coming next, the Terrace Marshalls, the Rashad Batemans, the Rondale Moores. Are these guys second-round picks? Have they a chance to fall in the second round? And I think they do. And so offensive line is certainly something that Washington could target. Linebacker, certainly a pretty deep position, and not your old school sort of Ray Lewis linebackers, but these new age guys that run all over the field and weigh 225, 230 and can cover in the pass game and come downhill in the run game. There are going to be a slew of those guys from 20 to 60 in which you can find to come in right away and give you that type of speed in the middle of your defense. I know that's something that Washington will be targeting, but if Washington stays put, they could target an offensive lineman there. Someone like Christian Darrisaw might be available. Tevin Jenkins should be there. Elijah Barrett Tucker played tackle this year at USC, but he'll probably end up at guard. But there's going to be a lot of value there. Wide receiver, linebacker, and even safety. Well, that's not a primary need for Washington. That could be something you circle back on in day two, day three, and still find players there that can help you right away.
CBS Sports is Ryan Wilson with us. A couple more moments on Grant and Danny. Notre Dame's Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. Is he a linebacker in the NFL that's an all-down guy at that position? Would he be a potential fit? Would that be crazy for them to take him at 19?
No, not at all. But it's funny you ask that question, Danny, because I asked that question to a scout a few months ago, and he said, that's the thing. I'm not convinced he's a linebacker. He weighed 221 in his pro day, I believe. So he put on some weight, but he may be more suited to play sort of that big safety role. But unlike a 215-pound safety, he's not just a strong safety. He can run for days. He can cover down the seam. Brian Kelly, the Notre Dame coach, said this at the pro day. He said, you have to have a position for him. You can't make him a quote-unquote hybrid player and expect to get the most out of him. So whoever drafts him, and Washington makes a ton of sense even at 19. I think a lot of people think he's a first-round pick. I like him a little bit higher in the second round. That's fine. But you have to have a position for him, whether it's safety or linebacker, and stick with it and let him grow into that role. He's the athleticism just jumps off the screen. I think he needs to grow a little more with the instincts. But again, he's a young player, and that'll come with time. And on that defense where he's not asked to do everything, even better. But yeah, 19, there's nothing wrong with targeting a player like Lucy Cormola there.
Same question for Zaven Collins out of Tulsa. That would feel like an overdraft. Where's he going to go?
No, that's a great location for Zaven Collins. He and Lucy Cormola could go off the board right around after any time after 16, 17, it feels like. He's 6'4", 264, I think is what he is. He played mostly off-ball linebacker, but there's some teams that like the idea of maybe putting him on the edge. He's certainly built like he's capable of doing that. I would like to see him get a little more aggressive in terms of coming downhill and taking on blocks. So those are little nitpicky things. I mean, you go watch him last year, Tulsa. I think he had two pick sixes. One was a game winner, like an 85-yarder, and no one caught him. So that gives you a hint of his athleticism, not only playing the ball, but actually outrunning everyone to the end zone on the other side of the field. And yeah, again, if he's there at 19 and the football team likes him, absolutely take him there because he's special. I don't think there's a better chance he goes off the board first than Lucy Cormola for me.
Ryan, great with us, man. Really appreciate it. And congrats on being able to retire. Your mock draft is done. All the millions have flown in, and you're all set, bud.
Now just wait for the big bucks. Thank
there
you, guys.
Go. Thanks, pal.
There is our buddy Ryan Wilson, one of the best in the biz on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. That would be a good opening question, I think, for guests in the future. Before we continue this conversation, what is your salary?
You're like Dan Patrick does height and weight. We go, what do you make?
Wouldn't that be so awkward?
Man.
I remember one time, this is years and years ago, we were in the car. It was me and my mom, and we were with a family friend and their kid. And they had like one of the friends of the family with them. And the kid asked like this family friend of ours, yeah, like, how much do you make? And it was just like, I just remember like that night I was a little kid and like we got home and my mom was like, that's a question you never ask anyone.
Ever.
Just funny, you know, like.
So, well, you
I'm
hear those things.
I'm probably five, and I remember this conversation like it was yesterday.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, this entire saga over the last year plus with Zoom calls and everything else, like my kid has been on Zoom for most of his academic year. So the conversations that little kids have in public where they're dealing with a teacher, we can hear them now.
Oh, yeah.
So like he's going, how's everyone's morning? I'll let everybody log on. Give us a second. And like someone's like, why aren't you married? Just cat. You're like, ah, good Lord. He's just handling it. He's like, well, I haven't found the right person yet. Why not? What's wrong with you? I'm like, just questions.
So
how much money do teachers make? Like all within 24 hours. It's like, oh my God.
That's
horrifying.
Been happening forever,
yes,
but you've never had to suffer.
But now
it.
We hear it.
Now it's the awkwardness. All right, let's hear, speaking of hearing things, the Washington Nationals lineup for tonight as they try to get a second straight win over the St. Louis Cardinals. Here's your lineup for the Nats.
Give it to me.
As they play in St. Louis. Victor Robles in center field. You know what we should do? Let's predict the lines for these guys tonight. We'll go through the lineup. We'll predict their stats this evening.
All right.
Victor Robles in center field. I'm going to say 1-for-4 with a single and a stolen base for Vic.
0-for-4, 2 strikeouts, but a walk.
Okay. 5 play appearances, I could dig that. Trey Turner will bat second and play shortstop.
1-for-4, strikeout, and a single.
I'll say 2-for-5 with a double for Trey. Juan Soto hits third, plays right field.
1-for-3, 2 walks, a strikeout, and a double and an RBI.
2-for-4 with an RBI.
We'll stake him.
I'll say an RBI double. Josh Bell, bats cleanup, plays first base.
0-for-3, couple punches, but a walk.
I'll say 0-for-4, 2 strikeouts. He's trying to get his act together.
This is just really hard to do.
Kyle Schwarber in left field, batting fifth.
The golden sombrero.
Wow.
I got an 0-for-5 with some punchies here.
Okay. I'll go 1-for-4 with 2 Ks for Schwarbs. Third baseman, Starlin Castro, batting sixth.
2-for-4, an RBI on a bloop double.
How about you? Multi-pokes for Starlin Castro.
Starlin Castro style.
I'll say 1-for-4 with a... I'll go single for Starlin Castro. Josh Harrison, second base, batting seventh.
Josh Harrison today goes 1-for-4, just like he did yesterday with a strikeout.
1-for-3 with a walk. Alex Avila, left-handed batting catcher.
0-for-4.
I'll say 0-3 with a K for Alex Avila. Steven Strasburg on the hill, batting ninth, your right-handed pitcher. He'll be 0 for the game.
Yes.
Strass will go 6 1/3 innings of two-run ball. He'll strike out 9. He'll allow 2 walks and 5 hits.
6 on the nose, 4 hits, 2 runs, 2 bases on balls, 8 punches.
Nats, Cardinals, getting started a little over an hour from now in St. Louis. That is your lineup tonight. Robles, Turner, Soto, Bell, Schwarber, Castro, Harrison, Avila, and Strasburg. It's time to figure out what we've learned today on Grant and Danny. What we've learned today is sponsored each and every day on the show, and it's something we give you after 4 hours of fun because we never leave here with the exact same knowledge we had previously. Driven by your local Honda dealer, racing for a great deal on the Honda of your dreams during the Honda Dream Garage Spring event. Take advantage of the savings. See your local Honda dealer today.
I'll tell you what I learned, GP. I've forgotten how much I love this bit, but it cracks me up. When I put the ball on the tee and you smack it over the fence, like I saw Dante Bichette do on a bet where he hit it over the wall at Camden Yards with one hand on a tee during a pregame thing because he was so strong. I love the Grant Paulson disrespects players from bygone eras bit. It is a hoot. It is a gas. I love watching the
anger.
Yes, I love
How old are you?
Very. I love watching the anger roll in from the online vitriol gang. I love watching people tell us that we have terrible takes and I remind them it's not my take. I'm just putting balls on tees. That's not my fault that they get over the fence. I love the Grant Paulson doesn't think anyone before 1990 could play bit. I love it.
I hear you and Monica are going steady now. Guys want to come over and go roller skating with us? It's going to be a gas. That's what I think of when I hear it's a gas.
It's going to be a gas.
That's definitely from a movie from the 70s or the 80s.
What movie's that?
I don't know. Oh, I'm just saying. Name a movie from the 70s or the 80s, and they probably said. It's always a high school kid telling another
kid. It's like American
kid,
Graffiti.
Yeah, they want them to come somewhere. It's like they're going to be sitting in a car, necking, as they would call it, like under a light, and they're like looking out over a city, and they say, it's going to be a gas. That's all I know about that. I learned 2 things. Number one. The Capitals are going to have an exciting debut tonight because their brand new forward, Anthony Mantha, is in the lineup. He will be on the second line with Backstrom and Oshie. I dig that. Other thing I learned today, this was courtesy of our buddy Ryan. Apparently, Gilbert Arenas is going to be coaching a Big Three team.
Coaching?
That Nick Young is going to be on. If that doesn't scream dysfunctional, awful Wizards for 10,000, please.
Man.
And I loved Gil, and I didn't love Nick Young, but he existed with the Wizards as well. But that era was so dysfunctional and so terrible and just an awful time in Wizards history looking back.
Ron Poo in the shoe. Yeah, no, thank you.
Maybe JaVale McGee can retire and be their last guy, or Dre Blatch.
Yes, is he available?
What's he doing? Call up Andre.
Remember the time he refused to check into a game, Andre Blatch?
I think that did happen.
Let's just never forget that. He complained about playing time because he was on a playoff team.
Oh, one more thing I learned today.
Huh?
A platypus.
Yeah.
And what's the other thing that starts with an E? Edamame?
Echidna.
Echidna?
Echidna.
Echidnas and platypuses are the two mammals other than birds.
Right.
That lay eggs.
Right.
And we know that because Colleen accidentally called us. If you missed
Colleen's call is worth podcasting.
Go back and find that sucker.
She's getting a platypus and a Zach Wilson jersey out of it.
Job well done, Ryan and Darius. Give them raises. For Danny, I'm Grant saying so long. Thanks for listening to The Fan. Byron Kurz keeping you company up until the first pitch of Nats baseball coming your way next. Go get them, Caps. Go get them, Nats. Let's have a nice DC double dip tonight.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.